All right, well, we're now in our fourth week of our sermon series of In the Beginning. We went back to the very beginning of the Bible, the book of Genesis. And we talked about Genesis 1, 2, and 3 so far. And we learned about ourselves. In fact, we're learning everything we need to know about ourselves. It's right there in the very beginning of the Bible, right? We learned that we were created with two parts, really, right? We were created in the 6 days of creation with the image of God in us. Each and every one of us, the image of God, the reflection of God in you. But that wasn't the whole story, was it? Then we came to chapter 2, and we found out there's another side to us, right? There's the earthly side, the self-centered side, where we were created by the dirt of the earth, put together by God, and then he blew breath into us and gave us life. Life from the Spirit of God. So we have this reflection of God in us, and we have this earthly side in us. And you put those together, and you get people who want to be as godly as they possibly can, but they want to be God too, right? And they have a choice. You let God be God, or do you try to displace God in your life? You try to take control, right? And that's how we live. And that's the nature of a human being right there. Oh, God loved us so much, we were so good in God's eyes that he didn't want us to be alone. So depending on which creation story you go to, God filled the world with all the things we need. And in the second story of creation, God brings us companions. All the animals of the world, and we give them all names. But none of them were good enough to be a full companion of the man he had created. So he puts man into a deep sleep, takes a rib out of his side, and creates a companion known as woman. So now we have man and woman. Only God says in the Bible, it's not two people, right? It's bone from bone, flesh from flesh, one. One flesh, he says. We're intended to be one, not two. And it's true for the entire human race. God didn't create us to be separated from each other by our differences, but be one family under God. So how's that going for us? Well, we're working on it, right? So then God puts us in the garden and tells us, this whole garden was made for you. This whole world was made for you. But I want to give you some advice. Don't eat from that one tree in the middle of the garden, right? Oh boy, I wish God would have never said that, right? Just don't eat from that one tree. And soon as we hear that, well, of all the things we want in the world, we want to eat from that one tree the most, because it's a temptation, right? It's the one temptation to be like God. It's that one tree. And the serpent comes up to us, that serpent voice. You have it. You have it. You have it. You have it. I just told my mom she has a serpent voice, by the way, just for the record. We all have it. Right? And it says, it tries to fool us. Did God say you couldn't eat from anything? No, God didn't say that. God said it was just that one tree, that if we ate from it, we would die. Oh, really? You think God really means that? You think God would kill us for eating from a tree? Look at that tree. That tree is so beautiful. That tree is so delicious. I want that tree. Boom. Self-will. We eat from that tree. We're kicked out of the garden, right? We're no longer completely at God's will. That harmony yet of the circle of life, that's all about getting back to what we had in the garden, you know? That complete harmony and wholeness we had in the garden. That circle of life and Lion King, that's what it's about, trying to get back there. And that's really what we're trying to do in our life. Get back to the garden. Walk over that bridge and get to it. So now we come to the fourth chapter of Genesis, and it's the story of Cain and Abel. I don't know why this tends to be video day, but rather than read that story of Cain and Abel, we're going to show it to you that a high school AP literature class did back in 2007. It was the best video of Cain and Abel I could find. I love it, these young kids. So let's show the Cain and Abel story from high school literature class.
This is the tragedy of two brothers, of Cain and his Abel.
Cain, aren't you excited? Today's the day of the great offering.
Yes, brother, I know that. I'm working as fast as I can. All right, little brother. Let's go.
All right, let me just get my offering, Cain. Just a moment.
I sure do hope God likes our offerings. I spent all month nurturing this calf.
Oh, well, I'm sure he will, Abel. I brought the year's harvest.
He'll love it, Cain. Priest, we've brought our offerings for God.
You've done well, my sons. Let us praise God for this great day of offering. Baruch Atah Adonai Eloheinu Melech Haolam, Hamotzi Lechem Min Haaretz.
And so God took their offerings, but he praised Abel's above all others and scorned Cain's, leaving Cain to take matters into his own hands.
So, brother, God values you above me. We shall see how he values you in death.
And God came down to praise his beloved Abel. But he found only Cain. And he asked him, Cain, where is your brother Abel?
What am I? My brother's keeper?
And God saw what Cain had done, and he banished him to a life of wandering. And so that no man would end his punishment too soon, he gave him the mark of Cain.
Give those students their props. Give them some screen time. So do you know that story? Fourth chapter of Genesis. Boy, it only took four chapters to get murder going. You know, that's quite a feat for us human beings. And to get a PG-13 rating at that, right? So what do you think the story's about? Sibling rivalry, as a lot of us try to explain it off as. You know, the story is really about human beings in this place of having choice, in the place of having free will, yet made in the image of God, human beings, me and you, and the mark of Cain. The mark of Cain, the mark we wear when we act out from our own selfish interests towards other people. It's the relationship between you and the other people who come into your life, whether they're right next to you, whether they're distant relatives, strangers, whether they're people you don't even know but encounter on TV or on the computer. All these people that come into your life, in your mind and in your heart, and how you respond to them. Well, there's two general ways to respond to them. There's the Cain way, which this quote right here explains from the great existentialist philosopher Jean-Paul Sartre, the Frenchman, the atheist, who described our relationship with other people simply as saying, well, what does that mean, by the way? Do you have any French readers? That was his famous essay, Hell is Other People. I actually use that a lot when I'm talking to people in counseling. Do you believe that other people are the hell in your life that you need to escape from? A lot of us do. Can you pick out the category of the people that are hell in your life, that create a living hell for you? Most people can do that. Do you know when we view other people that way, right, then we have to find a way to respond to them? And that way we respond to people who we consider hell in our life is not the godly way of responding to people. Isn't that a shock? Right? It's our own way of doing it. And it's basically summarized in two different things we can do to other people. Think about these other people in your life. If you're thinking about somebody right now, you basically have two ways that you respond to them. One, you try to control them. Now, there's 1,000 ways to do that, but you try to gain control over them. Or two, you escape from them. You get away from them. You don't want to deal with them. And there's 1,000 ways to do that. Cain did both. He gave Abel the ultimate response. He murdered him. That's ultimate control and ultimate escape. So he thought, right? So he thought. And it was anything but that. Because when we act out to the people that are hell in our lives, the people that we see as against us, as problems, as annoying, right? When we act out in our selfish ways against those people, the consequences always comes back on us. And it may not be worldly consequences, but I guarantee you, your heart suffers for that. Your heart carries a stain every time you act out against other people that way. And sometimes there are earthly consequences too. We hurt people, right? We can hurt them emotionally, we can hurt them physically, and we can hurt them spiritually. Often we don't even know it, and often we don't even care. And that's how we respond to so many people that come into our lives. They're not worth the time of day. I'm going to do everything I can to control them or escape from them. And that's our Cain side, right? And that's the Cain side we all have. And every time we do it, we are sinning against God and putting stains on our hearts. One way you can see this, and you'll realize, as I do, how much of this goes on in our lives, is just listen for the negativity. Just take a day this week and listen for the negativity from yourself and from those around you. We literally cannot resist talking negative about other people. Did you know that? It comes so natural to us that we literally can't resist it. It's that mark of Cain we all have. We have a need to do that. Why? Well, in our own secret, subversive way, we're trying to control that other person. I need you to know about how bad that other person is. I need you to know why you need to resent that person too, why you need to hate that person, why you need to be worried about that person, why that person shouldn't be your friend. Oh, and by the way, why I should. Am I hitting any notes here with you in your life? Give me some kind of, Jerry? Ask the wrong person. So much negativity in our daily lives. Now I want you, I'm serious, before we go on, I want you to do that. I want you to take a day this week and be conscious of every negative thing that you say and that you hear. Okay? Maybe write them down to see how many you get. Maybe I'll ask you next week what you came up with. It's going to be a lot. Hey, don't worry. Being aware of it is the first step, right? Being aware we have a problem is the first step towards recovery. Oh, there is another way, by the way. You can look at the world as if other people are challenges to be dealt with, obstructions to be moved, people to get past. Or you can look at people another way. I just happened to be on a blog this week by Gretchen Rubin, and she had this at the front of her blog. She had another way to look at things. Hell is other people, or heaven is other people. Now, of course, being made of two different parts from God, the reflection of God and the dirt of the earth, and being human beings like we do, we want to make a list. In fact, we want to make two lists, don't we? You're already doing it. which people in my life are like heaven and which people in my life are like hell, right? So you can understand. You can sort them out. You know how to respond to them. The people like heaven in your life, oh, you pour love all over them, right? You send them cards and you send them gifts. Send them flowers. Call them up. Tell them how great they are. Hang out with them. Buy them some coffee. The people on the other list, you talk about with the other people on the other list. Let me tell you about him, why he's not on this list, what you're really saying. You separate people. That's called, in case you're not sure, that's called playing God. I'm going to judge people and decide which list they should be on, my good list or my bad list, as if you truly know their whole stories and know why they act the way they do, right? That's eating from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. You see how this all fits together? We ate from the tree. We wear the mark of Cain, right? We can't get past it. So heaven can be other people. It's the other choice we have, right? And one of the reasons we have so much problem with the people that are on our hell list is comes back to us and how we feel about ourselves. And the people we tend to put on the hell list are people who make us feel less worthy, less than, not good enough. Then we're jealous, we envy, we resent, right? We want to bring down so that we can lift ourselves up. So the whole problem resides with us ourselves. We don't feel good enough about ourselves, right, to treat everybody like they're heaven. We've got to have some enemies. We've got to have some people that we can put down so we can lift ourselves up. And you know what the problem with that is? It's a lie. It's a lie we all believe. I do too. It's a lie from the world that says, you're not good enough yet. You've got faults that need to be hidden, that need to be overcome. If the world sees these things about you, then they'll put you down. Then there'll be consequences that are negative for you. And so instead of owning that and saying, you know what? My God says no. My God says I'm fine just the way I am. My God is redeeming me just the way I am right here today, loving me just the way I am today with all my faults and mistakes. In fact, God likes my mistakes so much that God came into this world and died on a cross so God could have them. And if we don't understand that and give God those faults, right, then we're not understanding what the cross is about. We're insulting God for putting Jesus on a cross for us because we won't give up our faults. We won't accept the forgiveness, all forgiving, forgiveness of everything to make us perfect in our Father's eyes. But being perfect in our Father's eyes isn't good enough. We need to be perfect in the world's eyes. We need to gain the rewards of being better in this world than we are in God's eyes. And that starts the whole cycle then of how we treat other people. The heavenly people in our life and the hellish people in our life. We all do it. We all wear that mark of Cain. Well, then there's my source that I always go to. Next slide. So let me go to Jesus on this. Let me see if he can get me out of this conundrum I'm in, where I've got to judge every single person in my life and decide which list they go on. You know, not just family members, not just friends, not just neighbors, people who I run into in the line in Walmart. Don't you do that? Aren't you already judging them about which list they go on, depending on what they say to you? About how much they're annoying you? About how much better you are than them? What about somebody you see on TV? Somebody you never know, don't have a clue about what their life is like. You're already judging them. Can't help it. It's the mark of Cain. You can get over that. And the way we get over it, like so many of the things that come up in the book of Genesis, is Jesus. He is the remedy. Jesus is the remedy. And he tells us several ways to get over it. Now, you're not going to like this, but here's what he said. This is not Pastor Bob interpreting it. I think the best place to start is Matthew 7:1. You should know this by now. Does anybody know Matthew 7:1? Starts with the word do. Do not judge. I know. You don't even want to say it. You don't even want to acknowledge it. It's in there. If you start there, it goes a long way towards reconciling your life with other people that you're having a problem doing that. If you stop feeling the urge and the need to judge other people, then you won't have two lists. You'll just have one. You'll find the beauty and wonder of all people, especially the ones that are hardest to love. And when you learn how to love those, then you start seeing the kingdom of God. Then you're on the bridge, right? Jesus says, you know, there's another scripture verse that I already said today that comes from Genesis about becoming one flesh. And the two, the man and woman, became one flesh, right? And that's typically heard. Where do you usually hear that? Weddings, right? I just used it this past weekend at a wedding. We try to convince the bride and the groom that they are no longer separate people, that they live with each other, for each other. They're united by Christ as one. But on the other hand, Jesus never used that as a wedding sermon. He used that as a truth message for you. For you. And how you are relating to other people. You are one flesh. Bone of bone, flesh of flesh, with every other single person on the face of the earth. Oh, yes, even the worst. You're related to spiritually by God. God is the Father of all people, and we're all in that family. In fact, we're already united as one. We just can't see it. We just can't imagine it, because we have to have our enemies. We have to have those we're against. That's the mark of Cain. If you can surrender that, and you don't judge, and you believe we're all one flesh, and that other people's faults are just like yours, forgiven by God, then we can start to be one family. Jesus says we're one family. And Jesus says what his father said to Cain. Yes, you are your brother and sister's keeper. And I know what you want to say. Who's my brother and sister? Well, we already know how Jesus responds to that, right? He goes to the most extreme cases of who you wouldn't think your brother and sister are. And he says that's who they are. Zacchaeus, right? The fraudulent tax collector. The Samaritan woman who has had five husbands and is right now living with her husband, right? Oh, the Matthew, the tax collector, right? The adulterous woman, right? Any other questions? By the way, I can keep going. The list goes on and on. That's what he's teaching us. Those are your brothers and sisters. Those are the ones you love. God, no one understands like Jesus. We can learn so much from him. Well, so here we are, living this life, made as we are with two sides, having the free will to decide how we respond to other people. And we don't want to give it up. We want to continue to play judge, right? We want to continue to have the freedom to judge other people, and not just judge them, but to tell each other about our judgment about them. And that sends us in this wicked, horrible cycle of, quote-unquote, killing other people. Maybe not physically, but we murder them in so many ways every single day, driving the stake into their soul, into their heart, into their feelings. We don't even care. We've got to stop. Somebody's got to stop it somewhere. I say it's got to be with the people of Jesus, because that's what he taught us. He would never do that. And he would never want his disciples to do it. So, next slide, last slide, there's a way past that. Jump on the bridge. That bridge is actually in the Garden of Eden. I usually say we've got an exact picture from the first century Garden of Eden. Well, this is an exact picture from the Garden of Eden in Beaverton, Oregon. It actually exists. But that's the story of our life, right? If you can learn Matthew 7:1 and start to make everybody in your life part of the heaven God has created for you, then you start to walk across that bridge. You start to regain little pieces of paradise that we got kicked out of, that Garden of Eden that we left and went back so bad for. That's how you do it. Unconditional, all-forgiving, never-ending love for the hardest to love. Jesus says, even the sinners love those who love them. My disciples love the hardest to love. So think about your list this week. Hear all the negativity around you and how we feed off that drama. And say, no more. I'm learning to love every single person. In fact, one little trick this week that I'll share with you as I end. Every time you have a negative thought about someone or are told a negative thing about someone, stop right there and pray love over them. Will you do that? Just try for a day this week. Pray love over them. In fact, if you're talking to someone, say, stop a minute, I need to pray. Right? Just stop the negativity. Stop the drama. That's a person who needs my prayer. You'll be amazed at how many people that list will include, and you'll be amazed at the impact it'll have on your life. So we go back to the bridge. Trying to get back to the garden. God has built a bridge for us named Jesus Christ. If we will just listen to him, all these things that we confront in the book of Genesis that makes us who we are remedied in the New Testament through the life of Jesus Christ. Indeed, that's why he came, to take those people that were created by God and fell, to pick them back up and put them back on the bridge. But you got to do what he says. Amen.